Off the Ball Daily,
a home for your favourite podcasts from Off the Ball.
Look, I'm dressed like a chicken. I have no agenda here. I'm just. I'd given up on the Lion thing. I was like, I'm chicken.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
OTB's The Hurling Pod
with Bord Gáis Energy,
proud sponsors of the Senior Hurling Championship.
Welcome along. It is just our second live podcast of the season, but we felt it was the right time to do so off the back of Super Sunday. What a day it's been. 3 years in a row now, we can look forward to a Munster Senior Hurling Final, which is going to have the rivals of Clare and Limerick up against each other. Waterford striking just 2 points in the entire last 18 minutes of the match as Limerick ran out 10-point winners at the Gaelic Grounds to keep their bid now alive for 6 successive Munsters and 5 All-Ireland titles in a row. That dream is very much alive after today. Clare were made to work a bit, but they shared the scores around 10 different players, sending over points today as they beat Tipperary by a goal in Thurles to safely advance into the final. Waterford's defeat, end of the road for Davy Fitzgerald's team for this year, confirming our prediction of a Clare and Limerick final with Cork progressing in third place. But we were as wrong could be when it came to the Leinster Hurling Championship this year. Probably the best championship we've had in 5 seasons. They did it in 2021. They did it in 2019. They've done it again. Dublin have beaten Galway in the Leinster Senior Hurling Championship. Davy Burke sending off is going to be the big talking point. We'll hear from Henry Sheffin on it as well. As Galway suffered remarkably a first championship loss in Salt Hill in the hurling since they were beaten by Tipperary back in 2003. That victory for Micheál Donoghue's side, of course the All-Ireland winning Galway manager, sends Galway out of the championship. Dublin will now join the reigning champions Kilkenny in the final. TJ Reid doing the business for Kilkenny today. 113 all from place balls. And again, very much disputed that penalty. We'll be talking about that. Gizzy Ling reckons it's the worst decision he's seen all year. So we'll get the boys' thoughts on that too. But their 2-game championship beaten streak by Wexford has been snapped. It's a first win in 3 for Kilkenny against the Models. And they go into the final in Leinster unbeaten as they go for 5 in a row in the province. Wexford now qualified to play against the Joe McDonagh Cup winners in the preliminary quarterfinals. Small margins for them, a bit like Waterford, with Wexford finishing up in third position. And Cork will be up against Wexford play the losers of the Joe McDonagh Cup final and the winners will play against Cork. So that is the run for that. And Wexford will be on the same side as the Leinster champions and Cork will be on the same side as the Munster champions. Carlow make a swift return to the Joe McDonagh Cup after losing by 2 goals at Antrim and the Saffron securing a 3rd successive year in the Leinster Senior Championship. So plenty for us to chat about. We've got loads of questions coming in. We've got over 400 people watching us on YouTube right now. So by all means, keep the questions coming in for the lads. Paul Murphy, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm good, in your undisclosed location away from us at the moment. Kilkenny into a Leinster final. Let's keep this positive to start on the Hurling Pod with thanks to Bord Gáis Energy, who are the proud sponsors of the All-Ireland Hurling Championship. You must be a happy man.
Yeah, of course. Very happy. You know, parts of that game today, Wexford had a great performance and, you know, Kilkenny were slipping to being 5 points down at different stages of the first half. Came out in the second half, reacted really well. And showed a lot more aggression in the second half. But like, you know, Wexford are in a good place at the moment. They're playing a good brand of hurling. They don't have many injuries. And they just seem to be really kind of enjoying what they're doing. They have a serious cut to it. So, look, it was a tough battle today and really down. It was to the last puck of the game. And if that ball broke differently out to a Wexford man, could have very easily been a draw, you know. So to come away with the win, it's great. And considering that, you know, Wexford are still in this championship and you know, potential to meet them again, of course. You know, it's just great for Kilkenny that they have the psychological battle won there as well. But yeah, look, of course, you're back in the Leinster final unbeaten. You have to be happy.
I'm going to swerve the farming chat, which is happening at the moment in the comments. We can come back to that a little bit later on. Let's get straight to it. Gary Farrell, I hope Skehill is okay. That was pretty much going to be my first question. So I deliberately didn't talk to the two of you a whole lot after the Galway game because I wanted pure, undistilled scale on what happened to Galway. I didn't want you to go, this is what I'm thinking, this is what happened with Henry.
You want me to go, so, fuck!
There's one for the swear jar already. Yeah. Scale, the floor is yours.
Oh, God. Wait. So you put up a comment there, is it for, I hope Scale is okay. Yeah, no, I'm not okay. We're in plan B territory here now at the moment. It's an amazing thing, 26th of May and the championship is over. I was talking to one of my friends and the club mate, he said we could actually play our club championship now in 2 weeks' time. Do you know what I mean? Because 20s are gone and the seniors are gone and both bowed out in a manner as bad as each other, to be honest. look, very disappointing. But I can't sit here and claim to be highly frustrated with Anthony in particular, because we kind of felt this coming. I kind of felt it coming. You know, I can't pinpoint to any performance throughout the year. Maybe phases against Limerick in the league whereby we let's call it a complete performance. We had flashes every now and then, but we never really got going at all. And I don't know, was it personnel choices? You know, was it tacticals? Was it structure? You know, then there's loads of questions about players in terms of age and youth, etc. There's a million questions, but we just didn't get going. And I feared that this was going to be the result. And would you believe we actually got off to a pretty good start? You know, you used the win pretty well, which is always, it's always a strong win in Saltill. You're always looking at 5 or 6 points easily. And then the sending off just made a shit of it in. I was genuinely concerned. Like when I saw the red card, I just immediately said, fuck, we're in trouble, because Dublin's game is a running game. And it's all about support runners. So if you haven't got like numerical parity in the middle, let's say, you're in serious pressure. So, and we didn't. And in fairness, look at the statistics. I have to say to some of the Galway players, like, we won the turnover battle with as many shots as they did, but the stats sometimes do lie. And in this instance, they did, because ultimately the stats said one thing: oh, it was a good performance in Galway. But when you watch it in real time, it wasn't. It really wasn't. Like, I had concerns about our defensive structure and shape going back as far as the Tipperary League game. That came back to haunt us. You know, where I had concerns about some pace in the middle, let's say between 5 and 12 of those positions, that came back to haunt us. You know, and just, we seemed quite lethargic. And it looked like at the stage in the second half whereby, you know, Dublin were, they were just steamrolling, and it never seemed like Galway were actually going to get back. You know, even go back to the Kilkenny and Wexford game, you know, when Keane Byrne got his goal and on 65 minutes, was like, jeez, this is, Wexford looked like they're going to come back here. All momentum, but Galway never had that. It never felt that way to me anyway. I wasn't at the game. But it never felt that way, that we were going to try going and fight our way back into the game. And it's just, it's like, where do you go from now, to be honest? And part of me feels like there has to be some sort of a great reset. Now, reset of what, says you?
Well, that'll be the first question. Look, there's obviously a few coming in here about Henry Shefflin and what happens from there. We've got disaster for Galway. What happens now? Support very poor. Danny pointing out in Saltill. There was quite a few left before full time, I noticed as well. But anyway, for anyone who's asking about Shefflin, let's get straight to it. Before I play the Shefflin clip about Davy, you say great reset. Is that a case of this management team has to go now?
I wouldn't even say it has to go. I just think that if, for me now, this is me just speaking honestly, like, yeah. Shefflin is a Kilkenny man, right? And I don't see him being part of a rejuvenation of Galway. I thought it would happen 3 years ago, you know, when he first got into the job, that he would, you know, scour the Galway hurling scene and bring in players that could be moulded or even, you know, strengthened on in a year or two. And there's been one or two, but that's as much as there's, in terms of personnel, that's as much as there's been. Now it feels like that we have to do a bit of a shift again in terms of players and integrating more younger players. And I just don't think he'll do it. I don't think he'll do it. I don't think he'll start afresh and go another 3-year term or whatever and try implement players. Like, there's going to be some barren days. There is. Like, there's going to be, I have a bit of concern now for the next, you know, year or two when we're trying to introduce some of these players into a senior squad. Because, like, normally we have a heap of prospects, you know, really good prospects that can go straight into senior. But there's not any prospects at the moment that are 100% ready, you could say, that if they get time in there, that they'll become I won't say household name, but they'll become an impact player, you know, for Galway in the next 12 months. So I just don't see it happening. I don't see him staying, to be honest, because there's a bit of work to do. And I think what will probably happen is they'll probably step aside and, you know, there'll have to be someone nominated from within to take on that task of resetting, which is going to be difficult, to be honest, because you're going to look to introduce players and replace guys who've done an awful lot for the jersey, but just, it's time to, I suppose, freshen things up.
This question has come in before, and I think you've answered this very frankly before. Question for Skell: does anyone enjoy hurling in Saltill?
I've said this before. The worst place to play is Saltill. It's absolute shite. You know, like, it's the worst place. I don't make no bones about it. If I could pick up the stadium and everything, facilities, and move it out to Athenry, you know, or somewhere around there, great. But Saltill is shit. Like, you know what I mean? It just dominates the game. Every game is dominated by the breeze. And it's not even a nice place to play hurling in. Like, Murphy will say that too. Like, Nolan Park's a lovely place to hurling in. So is Cusie Park. So
not
is
today. Did you see the state of the pitch in Nolan Park? Bruce has ripped it to shit.
Yeah, but I know. Okay, I should correct myself. When the pitch is when there's no contest in the pitch 2 weeks prior, Nolan Park is a very nice place to go. But just Pierce Stadium, no, it's not for me. It's not for me. It's fucking. I hate places that are dominated by weather. Specifically, like, every day.
You had a lovely time at Bruce a few weeks ago, Paul. I thought the pitch was still going to be in immaculate condition. I'm now worried. You know, there's a big game coming up next week, Tipperary and Offaly, the All-Ireland Under-20 final. Big scramble for tickets at lunchtime tomorrow. And I see this massive tract that looks like heavy vehicles were carrying out Bruce Springsteen's stage, and it's never recovered since.
Yeah, well, we spoke with this a few weeks ago. It's exactly what happened in 2013, where I think an excavator went in or something. But yeah, like, I don't know what the difference between Croke Park is and the county grounds, that they maybe can't hold this. But it looks like it'll take a while for it to get back right. And there were certainly bobbles in the field when the balls were going in there. There was lads struggling to rise them at different times. And like, that's very important stuff when, you know, it's a very finely balanced game. A defender is running back to get a ball. Let's say it bobbles backwards and the trailing forward comes in and picks it up. So yeah, it's interesting to see that it's not in the best condition down around the 21. But like, we've seen that before with concerts on fields. No more than Nolan Park, but like, 2019, we played Galway up in, I think it was 2019, up in Salt Hill. Ed Sheeran had played a week or two before, and side of the pitch, the entire side of the pitch, it was like a sandpit. It was,
you're right.
It was crazy stuff, you know. So yeah, like, I mean, Jesus, you'd have to, like, it's obviously great revenue and stuff, and like, that's obviously important, and it's a great occasion. But Jesus, you know, you'd have to think about the pitch as well going forward in terms of having these events, if that's the carnage they cause.
So many Galway questions, so why not keep throwing them here? How far did Skell actually think the Galway would go in the championship this year? Now, I would say this before anyone says Skell didn't see this coming. Last week, you spent most of the podcast saying you thought they were in big trouble against Dublin. So how far did you actually expect Galway to go?
Well, I suppose your opinion changes as the year goes on. So at the start of the year, I expect them to get back to a minimum Leinster final and get back into a minimum All-Ireland semi-final. That's what I expected. I thought they'd build. I thought they'd progress as opposed to regress, you know. And then as the year starts to kind of unfold, you're waiting for the Thomas and Les to come back and a couple of injuries, and you're saying, right, now it'll start. And then the Carlow game is, okay, that's just first day out. And you're kind of making excuses for yourself to say, right, it'll get going now. Then the Kilkenny game, they played good for parts of it. Right, that's going to kickstart the year. And then it was a real sucker punch what went on then down in Wexford. And from talking to a couple of the players, They said a couple of players now who were involved in the dressing room going back a number of years, like, they said that the Wexford dressing room was the worst of all time. Do you know what I mean? So the feeling after, you could say, you know, how you'd be so despondent and so just basically devastated after that kind of loss and performance, really. The loss is one thing, but the performance is another thing, especially when you had, as I said, 15 men versus 14 men for a period. So It's a tricky proposition, I think.
Is it concerning, right? Because, again, I'm going to go to Henry in a second on the David Burke one, because I want to get your opinions on whether it should have been yellow or whether it should have been red. But would the worry not be, against Wexford, you were a man up and looked short of ideas. Today you were a man short, and it felt like every time the Galway landed any kind of blow, Dublin went up the other end of the field and got a score.
Yeah, you see, for me, right, maybe it's just the way I see the game, but for me, if you've got, let's say, if the players have guidelines and a structure of play, you know what I mean, in terms of how they set up, you're halfway there. Do you know what I mean? Then everything else comes into it. You know, fitness, S&C, skills, personnel, right? Then everything comes into it. But it feels like today we were kind of devoid of structure and real kind of defensive setup, because Dublin were just getting through far too easily. And I have a number of, even the goal, let's say, I was looking at some of the players and they weren't recognising the immediate danger in front of them. They were not any more worried about who they were marking. And so lads could be vacating space and they just follow them like puppies. You know what I mean? I could think of three or four different occasions whereby our setup completely failed us and allowed Dublin to just pour through us. So like you've Dublin, they turn you over, let's say, in their half-back line. Next thing they start running through the middle. And what they'll do is they keep narrow and they start crossing in front of the ball runner, you know? But we weren't tracking runs at all. It was just so simple. Like, there was, how many times did you see, specifically in the first half against the Breeze, which was a very strong Breeze, mind you, how many times did you see on the terrace side Dublin managed running free? So this is even during, you know, the period of when we had 15 on the field. So it just looked to me like that we just, our setup and structure and shape was completely, you know, arseless, to be honest, you know what I mean? And like, if you go back to the Limerick second half last year, it was something kind of similar in the sense that we put together a great 30 minutes, but then made a structural change and just, it all kind of fell asunder to a degree. But I could live with the Limerick one last year because we performed for periods and it felt like we just ran out of gas, you know, and made a couple of decisions in terms of our setup and Limerick overran us enough that. But today, this year, I just can't really live with it. You know, I can't live with it because it's like, I don't know, are the players accepting the coaching? Are they listening? Is the coaching correct? You know, like, you, these players have probably trained together on the pitch over the last, you know, 6 or 7 months. I would hazard a guess and say they've trained 100 times. Do you know what I mean? So they've put time into this whole process, and it doesn't seem to be there when you look at it on the outset. And then I have to go back to Kenny and Wexford. Like, it looked like both teams had good setup, good shape. You know what I mean? And it came down into kind of individual brilliance to make something happen. So you take the Conor McDonald goal, and you take the, you know, even the penalty we'll talk about, like, this individual brilliance, that's what you need if your setup is good. Whereas in this instance, like, it was just too easy for Dublin to score, I'm afraid. And look, I can accept it because frustration is always bred from expectation. And I didn't expect us to perform, you know, unreal today, to be honest. So I'm not overly frustrated. I'm obviously, the result is frustrating and disappointing, but I felt like I saw it coming. I spoke to one of the Dublin management team on Friday.
Yeah.
Asked him, what's your situation? And he goes, we're going to win. Like not we're heading down to Galway to win. He says, we are going to win. So, like, it felt like, geez, okay, they've got a bit of traction in the last number of weeks. And even I listened to Chris Crummy's interview after, and he said that the Kilkenny performance had given them great confidence. And you could see that they moved it down a bit. You know what I mean? I was hoping the weather would come down bad and make it into a battle, but ultimately that didn't transpire. So, look, accept the result and move on.
Right. I'm going to ask El the direct question about Henry now in a second. But, Murph, before that, let's give Dublin some flowers here, because Junior Zed Hurler, who I think is Mife in on other formats, has said, spend an hour on Dublin here. Not going to be quite the hour, but let's give them some flowers here. This is a good campaign. The late goals to get the result against Wexford set things up nicely. They got the results against the teams they would have been expected to get them against. Left them in a situation where they Kilkenny and Galway in the last couple of games. They pushed Kilkenny to the pin of their collar last week. We spoke about it in last week's pod. And now they've gone over to Salt Hill, and I would say quite comfortably turned over Galway to qualify for a first Leinster final in 3 years. Given that we were a bit down on Dublin during the league, that's some campaign.
Oh, it's a great campaign. It's brilliant for Dublin, and it's brilliant for the players as well. You see, like, there's a lot of stuff up online there, just interviewing players after a game, and you can just see how positive they are at the moment, how excited they are. Like, if it was another team who had, I suppose, been through this over the last few years, constantly qualifying and so on, you know, they might be a bit more blasé about it, but you can see they're genuinely delighted, because there was probably, look, to be fair to them, there was probably a stage during the league as well where they were wondering where they're going to go from here. And I thought there was a very honest interview from Chris Crummy after it, where the interview, I think he got man of the match, and they interviewed him, and they said, you know, what has happened since match X that you have now picked it up? And he just said, not really sure, to be honest. Like, you know, they just kind of stayed at it, and probably two things, you know, like they got a small bit of a few breaks as well. Like in the Wexford match, in fairness, Wexford didn't play in the match against Dublin the way they played against Kilkenny today and see out the match. Like if they saw out the match, Dublin wouldn't have picked up any points down in Wexford Park, and maybe straight away Dublin are on the back foot. But, you know, when they got their opportunities, they took them, to be fair, and got probably a point maybe more than they were expecting, or other people, let's not say Dublin, but other people were maybe expecting throughout the course of round robin. But then even, you know, for me, we mentioned it last week, when they played Kilkenny, and there was a stage there around the 45th or 50th minute where it seemed like the crowd really got behind them. It seemed like that they really believe we can go and beat Kilkenny here. Now, regardless of the result, that belief I haven't kind of seen in a Dublin team in a few years, where it was this really, we're going to go at a team. And I think that, okay, they were disappointed with losing to Kilkenny, but I think when they felt that last week, I think they wanted to recreate that and go at this Galway team, knowing that even still, everybody was going to give Galway the favourites tags, I suppose. They still came at them. And then look, today, once Davy Burke was sent off, you know, Dublin were in that position to go, geez, we really have a chance here. Like, I do believe, and Skehill already said it there, that talking to a member of the backroom team, I do believe that they always felt, yeah, we can go and beat Galway here. But, you know, when you're 15 minutes in and a player gets sent off, you're always going to go, oh, this, we have to make this work for us. Now, Dublin have a good running game as well. So to be honest with Dublin, I feel that into the wind or against the wind, you know, they're still very strong because they run the ball really well. So yeah, absolutely. Dublin deserve full credit. And do you know what? We were speaking a few weeks ago about potentially Dublin drifting off and really, you know, fading away from the pack. This could be a really kind of sliding doors moment for them, where they actually, you know, go to a Leinster final. And I see people already saying, do they have a realistic chance of beating Kilkenny? Of course they do. I mean, go back 5-6 weeks ago, and they were written off really in terms of qualifying. And now here they are in the Leinster final. I think they'll be completely buoyed by this, like, and they'll really go at it and see what they can do. And you know, it's an Leinster final. Who's to know? So look, fair play to Dublin. It's great for them. It's great for the players as well. It's obviously tough for Galway, but look, for Dublin, they can only look after number one, and it's a fair achievement. And look, we hold our hands up. We wrote them off, and it just proves that the Leinster Championship has been great this year. That when you're being proved wrong, there's obviously something going right somewhere else that teams are stepping up to the mark. So look, full credit to Dublin and well deserved. Go on, yeah.
Let's say in your playing career, right, in my memory, Dublin only bet you once. Would that be right?
Dublin bet us in 2013 in Championship, yeah. In the Leinster semi-final. Well,
I'm talking Championship, but they've only beaten you once. Would that be right?
Yeah, well, in the last, 20 years probably. Yeah. 30 years, if I can remember.
This is probably a little issue we have in Galway, is because probably there's a bit of, I'll have to say it out, there's probably a bit of snobbery in some of the Galway folk towards some counties, right? And I would put Dublin in that bracket. And you know what? I'm sort of guilty of it myself at times, thinking, yeah, we'll definitely beat them. But when I think back of it, they bet us in 2011, 2013, 2019, 2021, and now 24. So they've won five times in the last, 14 seasons.
And it was a draw around that as well.
Yeah, there was a draw last year when they were 12 up against us. Mm. As I always say to people, like, if you're going looking somewhere and find the blame, first place look in the mirror. Simple as that. And after that, then see where to go after that. So, like, because I think, let's say, from a final matchup perspective, Croke Park is going to suit them, space, because like you said, Murph, they look to me like a real running team, and they have pace all over the place, regardless of size.
Yeah.
And if you've got pace and you can move through, like, pace in today's game seems to nearly have overtaken power a bit.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it seems like the game has shifted. I just think in the last 12 months, it just seems to have shifted a bit more, towards real pace, especially even look at the Offaly 20s, like, in terms of size versus the Dublin 20s, they weren't the same. Dublin boys were big, but Offaly with the pace, savage. Yeah, so that final, it's not a write-off, like.
Not at all. No, and the thing is that Dublin have probably just been missing over the last few years. It's just that bit of belief. And like, when you're struggling for belief, it feels like a moving target. Like, you're constantly trying to do something that gets a small bit of, form, a bit of steadiness, and you just can't seem to get it. And Dublin have been struggling for that over the last few years. But now, like, you really look at that team and you say, God, they do really believe. And like, they have great players in that team as well. So I think, Kilkenny will look at this and they'll say, lads, they went up to Salt Hill against Galway. Galway were in a tough position. Galway knew what they had to do, and Dublin still went out and did the business, regardless of the sending off. Dublin went and bet what was in front of them. And can you look at that and say, look, Jesus, that's a dangerous team right there. And like, until you walk out of Croke Park with the Bob O'Keefe in your hands, there's no point in going up there with a bad attitude, thinking that Dublin's form in the league, that they're going to bring that to a Leinster final. They're there on merits, so it's it has to be respected.
Yeah, I see lots of people asking about Murph's tweets, where he was like, his flamethrower of truth coming out about GAA goal, which we will get back to in a little bit. Jesus, he fucking really let rip on that one. But John Murphy has got the question that brings us nicely to the red card. What is your take on the red card? David Burke was rather upset with his old management team who were wearing blue. That certainly going down the tunnel, that didn't look good, Skell.
I suppose if you start with the incident itself, sometimes we get guilty of looking at, how would I put it, action over intention. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So sometimes I would always look at the action and say, right, was the action deserving of a red card versus the intent? Whereas I don't think the action deserved a red card. I do think he intended to stop his flow, to kind of check him. I don't think he went to do him, though. Genuinely, I don't. Because if you look at it in real time, don't look at it in slow-mo. Look at it in real time. He kind of pauses to a degree, you know what I mean? And runs into him, obviously. But I don't think he warranted a red card. Yellow card, absolutely, 100%. But I don't think he can stand here and say 100% categorically he deserved red. I didn't think he did. And that just, it shifted the game big time. But I can understand what the ref did, like. And the ref went over to the linesman, so I can't complain that the ref made a harsh call, because he went over and carried out due diligence, went over to the linesman, conferred with him, came back and gave him the red card. So, like, I'm always on about referees taking the time, going over, conferring with their counterparts, and then making informed decisions. And that's what he did. Now, whether the decision was right or wrong, different story. But ultimately, it was a big one for the game. So, what do you reckon, Murph?
Yeah.
Worse in your day.
No, I haven't. It is a very tough one. And like, again, it has to come back to, like, even when you slowed it down and they had a freeze frame on RTE, Don Logue, Joanne Cantwell and Jackie were still arguing. The two boys ran into each other at, I'd say, almost full speed to an extent, you know. David Burke's shoulder was in the vicinity of, was it Fergal Whiteley?
Yeah, it's Fergal Whiteley.
It was in the vicinity of his chin. And like, in real time, it's a tough tackle. Like, it's a rough one. And it's not that, nobody's saying that David Burke went out to shoulder him in the head or anything. But I think, again, I've used this, I suppose, analogy a few times, that if you look at how they're trying to mitigate for this in rugby, they're saying that, look, nobody intended to hit someone in the head, but in order to get the onus back on the player who's going to make the tackle to be careful, well, we have to have a culture whereby if nobody has changed their body position, which Fergal Whiteley didn't, like, Fergal Whiteley didn't slip into David Burke. The two of them were at the same height. And I know, like, I've done that as well. I actually agree with you, Skell. I've done what David Burke has done, in that he actually put his hands across his chest and tried to kind of just stop Fergal Whiteley's momentum. But the way they turned, both of them turned, he hit him in the head. And, like, to be honest, I have to go with the referee here and say, like, it was fair enough for him to give a red card in that situation. And I think that's the best we can say. Like, referees go, oh, the referee got it wrong, the referee got it right. I think Twitter is actually probably split about 70-30 on this one in favour of that it was a red card. But even when you're there and you can get all the replays you want on Twitter, again, it has to go back to the referee and the linesman had one look at it and it looked heavy enough in the normal play, you know. So until we go any further with this and there's a replay where we can give the referees a dig out, I think it's fair enough that you get sent off. Like, I'd be worried myself if I put in that tackle. I put it that way, Skettle, if you were running down the field and you're too tall for me, I wouldn't have been able to hit you there. But if I did that to someone in this day and age at the moment, I'd be worried. But in 2011, I wouldn't be worried. And yeah, I think that has to be taken into consideration. The game is changing. We're trying to protect lads in the head. Referees get one look. Two lads are moving fast. It's a hard tackle. I think it's fair enough. And I don't think... And you know what? That's no slight on David Burke.
Henry wasn't happy. This is what he had to say.
Obviously, it was close to me. Oh, sorry, I didn't see it full on. But I obviously saw the clip thereafter. And I think for me, it's a yellow card.
For a lot of the players, obviously...
Can I ask, for me, it's a yellow card. You know, when you have the opposing manager as well in the linesman's ear telling them that it should be a red card. You know, I think the linesmen and the officials need to support each other. The linesman in the second half told Colm Lyons it was a wide ball. He walked into his umpires, had a chat with them for a minute. I said, why is that? I don't know. And next thing, they give a pint. So I thought they're a team, just like we're trying to be a team, the thing. And I just didn't see that today.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, obviously, look, he's very annoyed. Davy Burke's very annoyed about the behaviour of his former manager as well. I suppose the thing is, Kel, if you're Micheál or Franny Ford or any of the guys who are now with Dublin and not with Galway, they were going to Salt Hill to try and win for Galway today, or try and win for Dublin today, I should say.
Yeah, like, regardless of the amateur status of all these people, they still have a job to do. You know what I mean? And it's the same thing, like, when Henry went down, you know, the year before last, and there was a bit of controversy with regard to the whole Brian Cody thing. Like, you know, that must have put him in a very precarious position going to your home county, taking them on, which is difficult. But I thought Henry was professional during that period, you know. And in fairness, I didn't see much interaction between Henry and Micheál, only the handshake after. And it looked like that Micheál just he just turned and walked away. So, like, that's Micheál to a T, though. You know what I mean? It's like inside, he'd be content with the result, just, I'm not getting involved in this, and move away. So I can sense that it's probably, in one sense, he's trying to do a professional job for the county that hired him. Another one, he's like, he's knocking out his own county. So it's a bit of a tricky one, but that's just the nature of sports, you know. You see it in the club game the whole time. People from different clubs taking over other clubs, you know. It's the nature of it. And, like, we had to have been prepared for that, with Shefflin coming, and so was Micheál going to Dublin. So he's done a good job. And as I said at the start of the podcast, I think it was during the league campaign, that was the passage back the way, I think. I think I quoted this to be his last year in Dublin, and might see him back in Maroon next year.
All right, interesting. Will Norris did beat Kilkenny in the 2011 league final as well. So it was the one championship defeat that you were talking about. But
yeah, we referred to championship.
I did see this one, which is quite clever, coming in from Skin490. The Great Reset, mentioned twice now. Klaus Schwab must be sponsoring the show. No, just poor gosh.
Spelled Schwab wrong too.
He did, but look, you're there always to correct any clever comments that are coming in. Let's just take Ness as one of this, because you talked about the reset. We kind of danced around it a little bit. This is a kind of what happens here. For Skell, will Henry go?
It is a tough one. I thought last year, even after the relatively positive year he had, that it was 50-50. I thought 2 years, and then I was kind of surprised another 2 years. Will he come back for a fourth? I'm honestly not sure. In percentage terms, I'd probably give it an 80-20. 80 that he goes and 20 that he stays. I can't see, if looking on the plus side, if he was to do this pro and con, what are the pluses at the moment? And to be honest, at the moment, there's not a lot. Like, that's just stress reality. Like, if he got beaten in an Ireland semi-final by Pint or a final, there's pluses there. But this year was just, it was very, very, a very poor outing and poor showing across the board. And so, like, the cons outweigh the pros, I'm afraid. And it looks like, I think people in Galway as well would probably, they're looking for a reset too, and looking for a person who's from within the county to try and bring in more youth and see if we can get something going, So I'm going to say 80-20, lads.
Right. There's the shots firing all over the place here. Banner rising. Could you ask Skell if Johnny Glynn ever actually ended up coming back?
Did he dislocate shoulder or collarbone today? Did he? I missed that.
Jeez, missed that myself.
He went off after like 4 minutes, and he was icing on his shoulder, so it looks like he got hurt.
Okay.
But no, it never got
generally,
going.
You got nothing from him, though, did you?
Not going. Did he even get the ball in his hand?
No.
I don't know, to be honest. He won goal opportunity against Kilkenny, and that's as much. But the trouble is, it was so fractured. You know what I mean? The whole thing that it was hard to get going.
Does Eamon O'Shea have to take some of the blame for that? Because the whole idea was that O'Shea was going to come in and make this forward line even better, and yet I didn't see anything better about Galway structuring their forwards all year.
If you're looking at individual sections, like if you're looking at structure, and forward play, right? Then you can point the finger at the management at times. Okay, you can. Because they're the ones, just like us in the 20s there 2 weeks ago, you can point the finger at us in terms of structure. But then if you're looking at execution, you can point the fingers at the players. You know what I mean? So I do believe it's shared responsibility, to be honest. I don't think you can point the finger at any one person or position group and say, they're the reason we got beaten. I just think when you get in those teams and you get beaten, you win together, lose together, I'd say we didn't get the results from Eamon O'Shea's appointment that we would have hoped of. I would have hoped that he could reproduce some of the execution we saw the Tipperary forwards back in the years. Where they were creating loads of space and movement, and it just didn't happen. So, but I'm not complaining the finger there. I just think it's collective. I just don't think we got enough of it, to be honest.
Yeah, there's at least 15 people here who have gone, let Davy Fitzgerald take over Galway for next year.
No.
I think they're trying to poke the bear now at the moment.
Well, they'll shoot the bear now in a second. That's <he'll> erupt.
Right, Murph, you take over here for a second. Possible pen and black card for foul on Jason Flynn, which wasn't given. This is the one that annoyed.
I don't know. I didn't have many strong feelings on that one out today. I think there was more probably contentious ones today than that one. Potential. I thought it was okay, but I don't know. Like, I mean, Skell, you had skin in the game. Did you feel that was actually?
Would you believe in real time? I see them kind of tussles all the time, Murph.
Yeah.
Lads are kind of hanging each other. But when it slowed down, you saw your man's arm up. Then you could say, right. But again, I put myself in the position of the referee and say, right, what's he seeing? And in real time, I was like, "Yeah, no, my mother beside me was losing her shit." but listen to me now. If a goalie man is 90% wrong, she still backs the goalie man. You know what I mean? So it's that's
a. I think there were shouts in every game today. To be honest, like, as in, let's say there was, it's now a thing where people are going to call for it. Like, and there was shouts whether they were right or wrong. There were shouts in each game, but I didn't see anything majorly wrong with Jason Flynn's one.
Okay, and look, he wore a double the freeze to us. He did Dublin. I can't complain. I can't point. Okay, the red card, we can talk about it, but I can't point to the referee and say, you're the reason. No, it's not. Like, in fairness, I just think the games were definitely ref differently today. Like, what was being refed in Galway and Kilkenny and Limerick were three different games. especially Limerick, class. I didn't know what was a free down there.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And again, look, I think it's on Brew who's here is asking as well. Well, hold on. I'll just take John Cal's comment first. Was Davy Burke's challenge any worse than the Jake Morris hit, which happened on John Conlon?
I didn't see that, no. Morph, did you see that?
I was watching it. I don't remember a savage hit. I remember one on Dermot Ryan, where Dermot Ryan didn't actually go down, and I thought it was a kind of a hit in the head. And I actually just thought to myself, geez, if Dermot Ryan went down there could have been a bit of bother. But Jake Morris and John Conlon, again, I all stages today, I was watching two matches at the one time. So if I missed one hit or another, that was the, I'll put that down to the nature of today.
Home of hurling here, who I think said he had Donald Burke captained, had TJ Reid on his team. Effectively, he was like 110 across all of his forwards individually today, cleaning up. Was wondering earlier about the fancy scores. When will they be released? I actually have a message from Fancy Hurling, but not with the graphic just yet. But the scores have just been updated. So I think if you want to have a quick refresh there, you'll see them. Apparently, Paul Murphy is on a rampage this week.
Apparently, I got 293.
Oof.
A lot of players did really well for me, actually. Because the Shower Bastards weren't doing too well for me a few weeks ago. they could have dug it out for me now today at least. Oh god!
You sound like the angry man in the crowd. He shower a useless.
Oh shit! And it's gas when you're like, it's fantasy hurling again. Fantasy being the core, the main word there. Absolutely. And you're roaring at the television at Lee Chin or somebody, and you're playing against Kilkenny or something. You get confused. You get sucked in. You get confused.
Kyle making the fair point about ex-Galway managers and Galway men coming back to haunt the Matty Kenny 2019. Daniel Test also makes a fair point. And again, look, the comments are hopping around the red card there. But clear contact to the head with no eyes in the ball might not be good for the game, but it's a health and safety issue that high shoulders like that need to be weeded out of the game. And look, there is a definitely a duty of care towards players. And I would agree with what Murph said a few years ago, that's a definite yellow card. And now I think that's being judged more towards a red card than a yellow card. On Brew as well, asking about the rules. Are the panel aware that the hook and hurling is actually a foul? The rules are a joke, which means we've no consistency between or within games. I'm sorry to say it, but hurling is a joke of a sport.
I should call off the pod, lads. Take it.
Hold on. The hook is a foul. What are you talking about?
I presume he's talking that a slap on another player's hurl, like a chop or something, that the hook is in the same category. I presume that's what it is. I don't have the rules in front of me, but probably one to look into, maybe.
OTB commenter has obviously set up this account just to comment here. Where is the clear contact with the head? Fergal Whiteley gets hit in the head, doesn't he?
Yeah, there was the lads on the Sunday game. I think Jackie was saying it wasn't on the head. It looked to me on the head. It looked like there was a shoulder and chin. Like that's just it. Like, you know. But
Here's one for you. Is it too far reaching? Is Chris Crummie the new Kyle Hayes? I don't know about the new Kyle Hayes, but Chris Crummie's playing very well, Murph.
Yeah, Chris Crummie's always been a great player. And I think like he's moved from the forward. Dublin have had this thing of, you know, between Liam Rush and Chris Crummie and the lads moving between the forwards and the backs. Chris Crummie's a great player, very powerful player. A handful. Anytime we played them over the years, Chris Crummie was always a handful. Physicality is excellent, loads of hurling. He's his own player. Like, I mean, comparing him to Kyle Hayes or whoever, yeah, they're similar in that both of them are probably about 6'4", 6'5". I think it's great for like Chris Cummie that, you know, he's always been a stalwart really for Dublin over the last few years. And for the likes of him now, you know, very rarely does he play a bad game. For the likes of him to, I suppose, have a bit of a day in the sun today and be looking forward to Leinster final is great. But look, comparing him to Kyle Hayes, probably no need in his own right. Like, he's a great player, and being born in another county, you know, he potentially would have all Ireland medals under his belt at this stage, you know. So he's a great player in his own right. And I think, you know, if he was a young player, if he was a 19-year-old coming in, I'd be saying something. But Chris Crummie is his own man, you know.
Yeah, I mean, last week, again, we were talking about how well John Donnelly played. Chris Crummie played brilliantly the other way as well. It was one of those rare ones where I think they contributed 10 points between them during the game last week. Pádraig Lennon has put the same comment in 1,500 times. And the reason I've read over it every time is because I'm not sure this is genuine or whether it's trying to get just Skell hooked in to talk about Anthony Cunningham.
What is it?
But I will indulge it. Ask Skell this because it's interesting, Will. Cunningham, will he go back managing Galway now if Henry leaves, even though he manages Bridget's? So, Anthony Cunningham back for another spell. I presume this is trying to wind you up. But go on, what would you say?
No. Next question.
Why not?
I knew you'd ask me a follow-up.
Follow-up? He just said, why not?
I think if you're intercounty management for me now, what I've learned is that you need to be in the game. You know what I mean? The game is evolving at such a pace nowadays that you need to be in the game, and like he's been out of the game. Bridges are football, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's been out of the game.
Well, it's the area he's moved into.
Yeah, no, I get that. Like, I understand that. No, I just think it's different. There's a man there that we can get. Go get him.
So you're all in the Micheál train. Let's get him.
Come here. At the end of the day, right, if Shefton stays, I'm not going to give out about this. Like, you know, I'm, whatever decision is made, I'll back them, do you know what I mean? But if he's staying for 1 year with the current group, then that's where I would raise questions. I'm kind of in the boat now where I'm saying, right, we need to probably invest more in some younger players and see, can we build a team again as opposed to trying to get one last hurrah.
Yeah, I saw we were tagged under the video. So the only thing I've seen of the Chris Nolan red card is the Left Wing podcast, Left Wing Back podcast, I should say, Left Wing podcast, the socialist podcast probably, have got a video up of what's the hurling parlance for this? The schmozzle in the game up in Corrigan Park. I don't know how Chris Nolan's been identified there as the aggressor who gets the red card. Would be my first take. But I am basing this purely on phone footage, which I've seen in a tweet that I'm tagged in. To me, it looked very, very harsh. A lot of people are saying, James Owens, again, that's obviously come in from GF there. I think this is a crucial turning point, because Antrim go on to win the game by 2 points, and the red card proves to be very much crucial. From what I saw of the video, I don't know how he gets a red card. That'd be my take. Yeah. I don't know how you boys feel. You saw it as well, lads, yeah?
I was just trying to look and see where... I was expecting Chris Nolan to absolutely lambaste someone, and I just didn't see it. And again, you could say we're working off mobile phone footage, but if it was blatant, clear and obvious, it should be there in front of us. So yeah, I'd feel bad for Chris Nolan there in that one.
Hmm. Swear jar for Murphy. Again, if you're here for Taylor Swift a few weeks ago... One of his 15 holidays a year would have been paid for with that swear jar at that stage.
Whoa, he just moves on then.
He did. Well, go on. You can respond to him then. Fine.
That's fair enough. No, I meant you just moved on. You just sly comment 15 holidays a year and moved. Anyway, go on. That's not important. There's a lot of hurling today.
Trying to keep him moving here. Doesn't play the extra man very well, according to Carl. A few lads asking about whether... well, look, Murph, you take that one up before we move on to the other games. Can Dublin give Kilkenny a good rattle? We saw it last week.
Yeah,
but let's go Croke Park, Leinster final, maybe a slightly different occasion. Can they put it up to Kilkenny this time around? Because my memory of 21 was the day of the game and a whole lot of key Dublin players being ruled out for injury. I think there may have been a COVID case as well, and it never really happened for them in that final. Are they going to be closer or potentially beating Kilkenny this time around?
If I remember 21 correctly, Dublin had a really good performance against Galway in the semi-final, and just the performance in the final was just nothing that reflected that. There's a huge chance. Again, I go back to how the bit of momentum Dublin had against Kilkenny when it was in Parnell Park. If they go back to the heights that they played that game with, if they start really well, and I think they're going to have to do a really prolonged 70 minutes. Like, Kilkenny today against Wexford, Wexford were the better team in the first half. And there was times there where the ball would break and Wexford were in fighting harder. They were in tackling. They were very fierce. Kilkenny came out with a different attitude in the second half and really got stuck into Wexford and put Wexford under pressure. And Wexford started striking kind of balls astray. Mm-hmm. The reason I bring that up is that if Dublin want to beat Kilkenny, they'll have to go for, 60, 70 minutes playing really good hurling and expect that if they start the game well, and let's say they go ahead by Kilkenny by 4 or 5 points, expect that, Kilkenny will reshuffle and maybe play a brand of hurling that will ask a plan B question of Dublin. How will Dublin react to that? That's the next question then as well. So, look, Dublin have been kicked a few times now at this stage and they've been down and out and feeling like qualification was a distant thing that they might get. Now they're in a Leinster final. How they deal with that now over the next few weeks is a big thing as well. How you deal with now people are maybe patting you on the back. The same people that were kicking you in the arse there a few weeks ago are patting you on the back. That's something to deal with as well. So going to a Leinster final, I really think that Dublin will attack into this. I don't see them sitting back off Kilkenny. They're in a place that they maybe thought they weren't going to be, despite the fact, Micheál Donoghue comes out and says that, we great belief in the team and we were always building. Absolutely. But I think if you told him 10 weeks ago you'll be in Leinster final, you would have ripped your arm off. This is, without doubt, a dangerous game for Kilkenny. And the one thing that I think Dublin have proven over the years is that if they get up like 5 or 6 points on you, which is very easy to happen in hurling, they get serious confidence out of that. And, they're a dangerous team then. So, look, this is going to be, hopefully this should be a great game. And absolutely, like, I think Dublin are going to definitely play their part in it.
Quick fire round then, because Connor has said, talk about the tweets. He means Paul Murphy's tweets.
Yeah.
2 hours ago, we had first-hand the WhatsApp where Paul was saying, I can't believe this has happened. Paul Murphy says, Paul Murphy over there on the right-hand side, out of the Republic of Ireland this evening, when is he not, a GA Go season pass holder, have my TV licence paid. Couldn't watch Clare Tip on the player as I'm out of Republic of Ireland. So you couldn't get the news channel then on the player?
Yeah, you can't get anything, yeah.
All right, fair enough. Paid €12 extra. So you paid on GA Go to get the abroad game.
Just pay for the standalone game, yeah.
Yeah, and when I emailed, they told me to buy an annual pass, but I can only watch games available in the Republic of Ireland on return. So basically, if you're a holder of a season pass and you go to somewhere abroad for work, you can't watch that game even if it's available abroad.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, exactly. And like I was just kind of saying that, like, I mean, sure, plenty of people, there's actually a few people sent me direct messages there. One former inter-county manager sent me a message on Twitter saying, I'm actually away for work at the moment. And he said, I have to do the same thing as well. He said, I'm after spending about €200 between, like, he was saying the same thing, between TV license, between GA Go. Sure, it's over €200 if you're spending all that. And then, like, there's not even a facility whereby you go to work for a few, or go to the country for a few days, that, like, you can't even recognize that. You can't just go, well, I haven't emigrated. Like, you know, I'm not trekking across the North Pole here. I'm just out of the jurisdiction at the moment and out to pay €12. But the thing was I just emailed and just said, look, am I right in reading this, or am I just, like, stupid about technology that I can't, you know, click in somewhere? And they just said, no, get an annual pass. But I think the annual pass then is that when you land back in Ireland, my understanding is that's a little bit different. Like, the email said something that, you know, you can only watch games that are for the island or something like that. But no, I just thought it was a bit mad, like, because, I mean, look, 99% of the time I'm watching hurling, I'm in Ireland, so it's grand. But, like, for the people outside of the country, you know, there's different restrictions there. And it's not a case that, like, I think the ideal thing is, okay, if GA Go is happening, you go on and you pay for GA Go and you have it and you watch the games. And if there's a camera at the game, you watch the game, and that's fine. But, like, they got back to me and said, like, oh, the games that are on RTE won't be shown. That's RTE telling you that, like, you know, so it's like, what am I meant to do here? You know, I've paid everything I'm meant to pay, and I have to pay an extra one. So, yeah, I haven't given out about GA Go. I think I've been very fair, and I've just bought subscriptions each year and stuff. But, like, that's a bit kind of Irish now, that you kind of, how many times do you have to pay for something to actually watch it? And I wouldn't mind. The fucking game in Turles was useless. So I was like, oh, God. So Richie Hogan has me money now, so I'm raging.
Catherine Coughlin, how wrong you are. At least you don't have to pay for the hurling pod, Murph. He pays to appear. That's how it happens. That's why he doesn't have the €12 left.
Yeah.
Ask Murphy, did he even bother with the VON? I presume a VPN is what you're looking at there.
VPN. I don't know how that. I'm afraid the computer would melt if I tried to do anything like that. So I'm... when they talk about people accessing GA Go who are in the back arse of nowhere and not great with technology, that's me they're referring to there. So
okay,
yeah, I didn't change.
Colin Duffy here, 79 annual pass is just the Ireland only games. A GB specific pass is €90 of one of those. It includes all games except RT, BBC, and TG Car. That's 149 for a total. It's 149 for a total worldwide pass. In fairness to Murph, I think when he was buying it originally, he didn't realize that he was going to need the worldwide pass. And surely the easy solution here would have been just give him back the £12.
Yeah, like I actually, in fairness, someone put in something underneath it that says when you're actually getting it, I didn't see that anywhere where it says that, oh, season pass. Like, season pass sounds that you're getting all the games. It's not really. They should have called it just, like, you know, 38 game pass or something like this.
Did you read the terms and conditions, though?
I went sued into them there earlier.
Just sue them.
Soon for €12. No, and I feel bad for the lads who are responding to me, because they're not the lads who actually made up the rules. So I do acknowledge that. But
I do love the messages that come in. Some of them are absolutely irrelevant to the hurling pod itself. But Steve McDonald, hi from Glasgow, on the bus number 3 at the moment. Glasgow green and white. A good day in the pub.
So there you go. Steven, good man.
Celtic do the double. Adamida scores the goal, and I'm not sure. Welcome along. There's all sorts of Cork discourse going on in the background as well. We will get to the Munster games in a second, but Cork apparently overrated. False dawn, 20 years and counting. And I definitely saw Pwell down here saying, I thought Cork had won the All-Ireland 3 weeks ago. So, right. They want you to power rank the teams that are left. That definitely came up. I'm sure I'll find the message when I scroll back here in a second. But 6 teams that are left, Skell. Who's 1-6 for you?
Ooh.
We'll leave the McDonagh teams out now, because I don't know if Leash or Offaly are going to beat Cork or Wexford. I would suggest they probably won't. So give us the 6.
Limerick 1.
Right. Tough call.
Yeah. Clare 2. Kilkenny 3. I've actually have Cork 4 at the on current 5 form, I should say. Wexford and Dublin 5 and 6.
Okay. Murph, what about you?
Say that. Sorry, will you just call yours out again there, Skell? It was Limerick.
I mean, Limerick 1. I mean, Clare 2. I went Kilkenny 3, I went Cork 4, I went Wexford 5, I went Dublin 6. Just teams left, that's what you asked me, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, sorry, I thought you were right.
Yeah, it's fair enough. I think the only two there is, I know as I say, Kilkenny and Clare, but I think it's a toss of the coin there really between Kilkenny and Clare. Kilkenny haven't played Limerick yet. I know Kilkenny are unbeaten, but they haven't played Limerick, where Clare have played Limerick. Clare in Leinster Championship, they'd probably be unbeaten. Well, they would be unbeaten, yeah. So it's a tough one there, but at the moment, that's a fair overall reflection. But I might swap Kilkenny to 2. Could call me biased there, I suppose. Oh, yeah,
Catnap is going to be all over you. Kilkenny 3, hilarious. In the last two All-Ireland finals. And
Catnap, Stillboy would say, play it nice and cool, all right? Just play it nice and cool. Sit there, 3. All right, and let's just say nothing. it's fine margins. It's fine margins. If you're asking people to put up their top 6 there, I think 4 of them will be correct. But I just think that there's an argument there for Kilkenny and Clare at current form. It's almost like asking the same question of who's in hurler of the year. We at the end of the league we said David Fitzgerald. Now a lot of people will be saying Lee Chin. And I see another comment there saying Shane O'Donnell. Each week it nearly changes, and it changes on form as well. And that applies to the teams also. Yeah. I'm not going to lose too much sleep if you put Kilkenny second or third at the moment.
Yeah. Right. A few people there. Who are the All-Ireland finalists going to be? We'll move to the other games then.
I think this year above all is the hardest to call, I think.
Yeah.
Because Cork are coming from a different position, let's say, than Tipperary are coming.
Yeah.
Last year, if you get me.
I think that's a tough one to call as well, just to say that you have to think about Munster first, and that's for next week's pod as well, because you know that Clare Limerick game, seeing Limerick shoot 19 wides as well, what happened to the start of the league, started championship, there's a lot of water under the bridge since that, and Limerick have been defeated, and that's not, before crack of the ash hop office here now, that's not doubting Limerick, but if you look at Limerick today, the shooting boots just weren't on. Clare will still be hurting from the first game. So I think, to look as far as what our semi-finals are going to be at this stage, you have to decide what is going to happen in Munster and Leinster. And I think that's for next week at the moment.
Yeah.
Hmm. Oh, yeah. Look, again, lots of love for Shane O'Donnell there in the last few minutes as well. You can take this one, Murph, about from Timmy. Who asked, lads, do you not think Kilkenny are boring, efficient, but boring? Where's the forwards' ambitions? Where's the killer type aggression and going for goals? They've become a boring team. Is that fair?
No, I don't think that's fair. Where's the killer aggression going for goals? Kilkenny, have they scored goals in all their games in the round robin? They scored goals against Dublin, Wexford, did they score against Galway? I can't remember. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Kilkenny, in the first half today, the forwards didn't really click in the first half today. You had John Donnelly was the only scorer from play for about 20-25 minutes. You had Paddy Deegan popping up at points. You had Richie Reid popping up at points. And it took a while then for Mossy, Billy, Owen Cody to jump in. Even Mikey Carey jumped in. There wasn't a huge spread of scores with Kilkenny today. But I think it's the way that they played in the first half against Wexford. It wasn't really working out, and the type of ball they were feeding wasn't working out, but they corrected in the second half. What I like about Kilkenny at the moment is that they're adapting. There was 2-3 years ago, Kilkenny played Wexford, Nolan Park, started striking long ball, couldn't return from it, couldn't seem to figure out during the game, how do we reset here? But they seem to be able to do that at the moment. They seem to be able to push up when needed and sit back when needed. Mightn't be glamorous at times. It mightn't look pretty. It mightn't be the hurling you associate with Kilkenny from 2006 when there's lads hitting balls in top corners and lads soloing 40 yards. But that game is gone. There's very few players picking up balls, between the 65 and 45 and running for goal. I think Kilkenny have proven. You go back as far as All-Ireland last year. Kilkenny hit Limerick for goals in the All-Ireland final. They're able to do it, but where I think Derek and the management are at the moment is that they seem to be going a kind of a horses for courses type game from week to week. You know, we saw them in the early rounds and they identified they needed a small bit more physicality, brought in Luke Hogan and brought in John Donnelly. Like, John Donnelly wasn't starting some of the games and they brought it in. So it looks like that they have the tools on the bench to adapt, and that's what they're doing at the moment. I don't think they're concerned with having a set start in 15 or playing glamorous hurling. I think they're concerned with getting the job done, being gritty when they have to be, doing what's necessary and getting wins. But, you know, if you came for lads hanging the ball up in the top corner at the moment, there's no team going out doing that every day. It's just, it's not where the game is at the moment. So I'm happy with the brand of hurling they're playing. I think at times it's great brand of hurling. And I think at other days or other times during games, they just revert to making sure that they're shutting up shop at the back and doing what's necessary, you know?
Yeah, again, I'm trying to catch up with the comments here as I kind of read through them here, but a lot of people pointing out about Owen Cody very much brings that directness and going for goals. Definitely. As well. So, you know,
definitely
having him is incredibly useful. Right, let's get across to the other games then, because we'll end up getting caught in the weeds of questions about power rankings and so on that we can do again another time. But before we do that, there was one that jumped out here, where somebody in a message that I had starred and now have scrolled down too far had pointed out that they bumped into someone who knew Skell in South Africa, which reminded me of something while I scroll back up. Anyone who listens to the members pod a couple of weeks ago, we had the revelation that the guys ended up in the back of a paddy wagon after our live roadshow at the Bord Gáis last year. The guys got lifted to...
Not for bad reasons. Might just clarify. Yeah.
Voluntarily.
Apparently, yeah. Apparently,
for
a picture...
For reasons.
Yeah. Sure. Picture still exists, apparently. I haven't seen the picture yet. I'm on the way to the Europa League final on Wednesday night. Seems every guard in the country has been redeployed to the Dublin 4 area on, I'm just going to say it, probably very nice and generous overtime to cover the Europa League final. Who do I bump into? The guard that put the two boys in the back of the paddy wagon. Turns out that he knows Skell because I believe he's marrying someone related to your wife. Is he? Is that the way this is going? Something like
I
that.
I won't name, but my sister-in-law is a guard in Dublin. She was.
He was as of last Wednesday, anyway.
He won't name anyone.
Yeah, but I can't see them. People won't know her here. They won't know her, but her fella, yeah. So into the names.
No. Oh God.
Oh, sorry, it was in Cape Cod. Here we go, I found it. Ross the Boss. Skell, I randomly met an American cousin of yours at Cape Cod.
Yeah, see, most of my cousins are Boston, kind of, that area. So Cape Cod is down the road. It's weird meeting. That's random, isn't it? Jeez.
Well, there you go. It was incredibly random when I bumped into your mate, because he called me over, and I was like, what's going on here? Yeah, you're in the middle of the street, and I was waiting to meet friends of mine ahead of the game, and I was like, oh, they're never going to believe this, but I had to message you straight away to go, I've met the guy. So, right, let's talk about the other games. Murph, take up the...
Patrick Cotlin. How do you know that?
What's this now?
I said that at the pod last year, didn't I? I did, yeah, sorry.
What did you say at the pod?
I forgot. I mentioned that story at the roadshow last year.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. How did you know that? I was like, told everyone. That's how.
Right. The penalty call in the Kilkenny game, Murph, proved to be quite important. Could have been the difference between Wexford going to a Leinster final or going into the All-Ireland series. We had a little look back. I know Gizzy Ling was saying about an hour ago, worst decision he's ever seen. Is it a penalty?
Probably not. No. Don't really think so. What?
That's just honestly, how blunt you were. He was like, no, it wasn't, no. Move on.
No, like, I mean, delighted when it was called. Delighted TJ hung it up. Like, funny enough, nobody was sent off. It was a black card, but there was no one sent off, which was another side to it. So you could kind of look at that. It appeared to be Liam Ryan was doing the fouling. So, but they remained with 15 players on the pitch. Probably doesn't even it out, but it was certainly a funny one. So that was the biggest thing when I was looking at it. Like, when they showed the replay of it, and then looked up and I could see that Liam Ryan or they had a full complement of defenders. That was something that actually confused me. So I just think it was one of those ones where you're saying it was a bad call. But, you know, the funny thing was, by the letter of law in the first half, Mossy Keown wasn't a penalty, but felt way more like a penalty than the second one. Now, absolutely not saying referee was out to balance things out. No, but it... you know, Kilkenny got a point. It was the one in the first half where Mossy Keown catches the ball, turns Matthew Hallin. Matthew Hallin swings out of him. Mossy Keown was probably a bit genuine staying up, realistically, you know. But no, look, to be fair, the second one, I'd agree with probably Wexford people here and say it probably wasn't a penalty, no.
Right. That's very fair.
You hung it up, so I don't really care if I say no anyway. So it's
well, there you go. I mean, I know we were dual screening Scale earlier on to try and keep an eye on this, but what do you make of Kilkenny Wexford?
Very exciting game. I thought in terms of intensity level and as a contest, it was far better than what was in Galway. Like the Galway game, we had 19 points to 2-11 at halftime. Like it was a pure signature of what the game was offering. It was very loose, very open. But then go down south and it was a real contest. And like Kilkenny, like the age old tradition of Kilkenny in terms of they're never bet, and they fought back really well because Wexford deserved to be up at halftime. They were full value for the margin of how far they're ahead. But I think Kilkenny, the matchups, they got them very right in the second half. You know, I thought fucking Mikey Carey did well, Lee Chin, Hugh Lawler did well, and Conor McDonald. You know, they got caught in midfield. Paddy Deegan, I thought, was really good, excellent centre back. And the puck off strategy in the short up a bit and started using the ball a bit more. They only went through probably an 8 or 9 minute spell from like minute 60 to 66, you could say 7, whereby they let Wexford back into. Now, Wexford came back hard, in fairness. I thought when the game went to like 5 and 6 that they'll see it out, they'll tack it on. But Wexford fought back diligently. And in fairness, they got a bit of a bounce off their subs when Foley came in, O'Connor came in, and then sure, Byrne is electric, lads. It's electric at the minute. And their forwards are in good form, so they're all contributing. So look at the contribution they got off McDonald. It's not always lead change, it doesn't always have to be him. But then you had McDonald's got, as you get 1-2, Byrne 1-3, you know, like Rory Connor, very penetrative. So like, they're in a far better position now than I expect them to be in. And I noticed too, just them physically, and I know they're beaten, I don't get me wrong, but like McDonald is in great shape. Matthew Hanlon is in great shape. They look to be very, very physically fit this year. Like more, maybe I'm wrong here, but more so this year than I've seen in years previous. Like that they really have got into prime good shape. And they have, like we're saying, similar to Dublin, they have got pace, you know, real penetrative pace and power in a good mix. So they can play a short game, they can play a running game. And like when you're someone like McDonald, there's a square, they can obviously play a long game. So they'd be very, very content to where their position is at the moment, regardless if they're in Leinster final or not. We know that, but they're very content to where they're at. And Kilkenny or Kilkenny, you know, never bet. And great to see a good crowd on there too for Leinster Championship games also.
Yeah, so it's about 18,000, I think, in the end. They're hoping to get 26,000 in for the under-20 final at the same venue next week. I don't know, Murph, what did you make of the umpire making an absolute balls of that decision in the under-20 final on Friday night? Did you see it?
I didn't see it on Friday night, Will. No.
Did you see it?
Oh, wait, sorry. The tip Cork one.
Tip Cork one,
yeah. Yeah, sorry, yeah. So, apologies.
Now, don't get me wrong, right? Ben O'Connor admitted it afterwards. They hit 18 wides, I think, during the game. Cork left so many chances behind them. But like ultimately, that's as clear a bad decision as I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, it was a bad one. It was on par. Like I remember looking back and it was the one in another direction. I think it was Austin Leeson a few years ago, was it against Tip in the Gaelic grounds? I think I remember something like that where he caught the ball. It wasn't over
the ghost goal. Yeah.
The ball was given. Felt something like that. But, you know, a ball bouncing up and hitting the net from that distance. Like the first thing I'd be thinking if I was an umpire, and again, not to be jumping on my high horse here and tacking umpires, but I'd be thinking a ball landing in, like you're always worried the keeper's going to drop it. That's my first thing. If the ball's coming down like that, you're thinking, I need to watch here, see this keeper step back over the line. You wouldn't even expect it really that if it hits his hand, it goes up into the net. You wouldn't even expect that, but you should be there to expect to I suppose, be in a good position to see if it does happen. Yeah, it's a tough one. I'd say it's a tough one to swallow that, like, it's a break of the ball. They didn't get it, but the fucking thing hit the net. So, yeah, I can understand Ben O'Connor's disappointment after the game. I know he was saying they hit a lot of wides, but, you know, when you get a bit of fortune like that and it's not picked up on, it's hard not to feel a little bit disheartened.
Okay, let's dig into the games then. If we go to the Gaelic ground scale, this is one where you were wondering if it was going to get a little bit ropey for Limerick. But let's look at the way that Limerick played, particularly in the last 20 minutes or so. We talk about the fact that kind of 30 points is where you set the total at. And I was watching that just kind of work its way towards the 30 points at the end, and they eventually hit that total. But there's a couple of spells there where Limerick just take control. Even with the injuries they have at the moment, even if they're not quite hitting top gear just yet. After the Shane Bennett goal, they go on a 10 points to 2 spell after that to put themselves into a good position coming into halftime. And then they keep Waterford to just 2 points in the last 18 minutes of the game as they power home themselves.
Yeah. And they powered home with replacements. You know, if you consider the injury list they have at the moment, there's some prominent players there that they're missing. In all areas of the field, you could say, if you go to Sean Finn's situation, go up along to Jared Donovan. Now, Peter Casey, Seamus Flanagan obviously had to go. So what they're getting, like the impact that O'Brien had when he came on was, can't be understated. Like for a kid, he probably featured, you know, sparingly, you could say, over the last while. But what he did today was excellent. Even O'Connor, when he came on, Adam English has been adding to this Limerick team, you know, throughout this whole year. O'Dolly came on, but didn't get much. But what they're doing is they're contributing. It seems to be the same four or five guys every day, and they don't seem to miss a beat. So I was very impressed with how they were to continue the level of performance and even raise it up, you know, a stack or two towards the end. But like you're on about the shots there, with like going through the stats, like they had 49 shots. So let's call it 50 rounded off. And like if you're getting 60% shooting efficiency, you know, that's really what Limerick are aiming for. They'll shoot. So sometimes they take choices, and like sometimes I'm be questioning some of Jimmy Burns' choices too in terms of shot. But like if they, Limerick are so good on two things. They're so good at creating shots and the opposition puck out. So if you can do both, you can just keep shooting. So if you're good on the opposition puck out, well, we'll just shoot. You puck it out, we take it back off you, we shoot again, and so on. And it becomes that kind of mini game. So they had 50 shots, close to it. And they got, was it 29 points? What's the score today?
30 points.
Yeah, they hit 30.
English got a point just at the end, didn't they?
Yeah, so they got to 60%. Like, and that's extremely impressive. And they weren't. I won't say they were flawless. Lads. Like there were still a couple of things that could get better. Obviously, shooting is one of them we were talking about. But and like some players didn't play to the heights that you'd expect. Like Aaron Glenn had a relatively quiet day for me. Flanagan had obviously. Keane Lynch was quite ish, you could say, to be honest. But then other guys like Kyle Hayes, Hegarty, when they needed him, you know, were just excellent. I thought, well, I don't know who was very good. Not enough has spoken about him today. You know, and even Mike Casey, I think that was his first game back since he went off injured against Clare and QC Park. And like he didn't miss a beat either. Excellent under high ball. So they just kind of dominated and ground out Watford, to be honest. And I think no more than Galway, like Watford, that was that if you remember the under what year was it? I think they won the minor in 2013 with Ozzy in that group, and then in 2021 after. So there's a lot of the remnants of that team as well is coming to a time, you could say. So just didn't knock enough change out their forward unit. You know, Desi was very quiet. Prendergast quite, you know, even the likes of the Bennetts were quite enough, if you like. So, but Limerick were full value for the victory. And, you know, I think the 2 week break didn't really, really good. And now they'll kick on again.
How do you assess Waterford now after all this, Murph? Because Davy Fitz was saying off the ball after the game that the phrase he used was they ran out of juice a little bit. And it was almost like they had to go to the well after the difficult game against Clare last week. Like the reality is, as much as we have Clare Limerick in the final and Cork going through, very small margins for Waterford here. Late fight back from Tipperary, the 65, which was very hotly disputed last week. One of those goes in their favour. We're talking about Waterford qualifying here.
Yeah, completely. There was fine margins here for Waterford to qualify. But like the one thing I was thinking about after the game, like it was great to see Waterford actually be far more competitive than we gave them credit for at the end of the league, because we just didn't see him going anywhere. But the first thought I had was that would they have got more points on the board from the round robin if they'd hurled the same way in the round robin that they hurled in the league? In terms of, now I'm talking tactically, I'm not talking about, you know, they obviously brought more players back from injury and different things in the round robin. But this wasn't the type of hurling that they were playing in the league. You know, There were so many mad things going on in the league that I think as a group, as a panel, they probably didn't have enough players playing in the formation that they were playing for the round robin that were, let's say, that they could introduce off the bench, they could understand the brand of game that they wanted to play. It's like they introduced it too late during the year. And I agree with you, like a break here or there and they qualify out of Munster. But at the same time, you know, we were looking at Cork last year and they won one game. Like, I mean, you have to stand over your results at the same time and just take ownership for it. And you could say that, you know, there was comments after the game also that they were, you know, that they outperformed the way some people thought that they were going to perform. Yeah, that is true. But at the same time, the brand of hurling they were playing during the league, I don't think it set them up well enough to go into a round robin and consistently actually perform really well and get those breaks. You know, the other teams that have qualified now, Cork, Clare and Limerick, they all have had good days and bad days, let's say. Okay, let's say Limerick, not as many. But the other teams have all, you know, they've all cut their teeth. They've all blooded players. They've all played consistently a fairly same brand of hurling. They played in the league, ingrained it into their players, and were able to call on those players when times got tough. You could say Waterford, if they got one extra call during this round robin, well, they would have qualified. But I don't think they nearly earned it by the way that they were playing in the league, that they could have actually, you know, had that bit of cuteness come in off the bench, have a cohesive panel as a whole. There's great players. There's absolutely brilliant players. This Waterford panel is a good team, or it's a good panel. And I think the biggest disappointment for me is just that, you know, I just don't see a consistency in them that you could definitely say that they would have fully earned a third place, you know, and that may be harsh or whatever, but when you look at the three teams that are there, that's savagely competitive. Like, I mean, there's a lot of people talking about Cork going here for an All-Ireland final. Clare have been consistently knocking on the door the last few years to win a Munster and to get to an All-Ireland final. And Limerick are one of the greatest teams of all time. That's the group you're trying to break into. And I think if you're kind of dilly-dallying in the league, you know, playing mad formations, trying out mad things, and you expect it's going to click for you in the championship, you know, that just doesn't work out for me. And I think they were kind of swinging from the ropes for a small bit against Limerick today. And, you know, Limerick's wides probably kind of helped that as well. But, like, you know, I'm disappointed to see Waterford go. Waterford are an exciting group of players. They're an exciting team when the going is good. But I just don't think they cut the mustard early enough in the league to carry that over into the round robin and qualify.
What do you reckon, Scal? I mean, again, we were very hard on Waterford early in the year. I think not without foundation, with the way they played in quite a few of the league matches. And then couldn't but be impressed by them the first couple of games in Munster. And as a lot of the Waterford fans are pointing out in the comments at the moment, really it's that last 4 minutes against Tipperary that they'll go back to rue.
Yeah, yeah. What I'd be really thinking about now as well, if they implemented the structure and the system they had in the championship earlier in the season, like would they be further on improved come the championship, if you know what I mean? Now, I know they beat Cork on the first day out, but if they'd implemented that, like, even back into last year, started the league this year and kept to it, would they have been better? Who knows? I agree with Murph. They're an exciting team. They definitely produce more than what we assumed that they'd produce go back, you know, 2 months ago. Because we were obviously basing it off the evidence that they produced in the league, and that was quite poor. There was a lot of problems and a lot of fires to put out in that Waterford team, you know, after their league exit. But what they did is, in credit to them, they kind of fixed a lot of those issues and became really competitive. And there was no game, like today's game, you can look at today's game and say, yeah, they were in the last quarter, they were blown out of it. But really and truly, like, they were competitive in every game, you have to say. No, credit where credit is due. Beck Cork threw a chip, you know, competitive for large portions of the Clare game, bar the decision, as we know. So it's not as if they got like, their exit is a far better exit than what Galway's exit. If you know what I mean. Far better. They've far more elements of their game and even personnel performances to look at and say that they've more positive than we have. You know what I mean? So I have to give credit to them for what the players produced. And, you know, I won't say there's something to build on, but it's a continuation. But they do need more people, I think, because what's happening now is teams bringing in certain players off the bench and they're contributing massively. And next thing you know, the game is getting away from Waterford a bit. So I think if Waterford, they need to find a couple of players in their underage structure. I know Kim McGrath spoke publicly about it, was it last year or the year previous? I think it was last year, yeah, that there was struggles going on. And in fairness to the man, he took over the mantle himself with the guys to the 20s. Like, so if you can blood in the modern ourselves, get in a couple of guys and keep the train moving, it's going to do them good.
Is there anything specific for you, Skell, that Waterford are missing then when you say they're looking for a certain, is it just depth to the panel or is it a specific weak point that you see?
Well, see, again, you've heard me before, Will, about ball retention. So like, if you look at the Kilkenny's forwards at the moment, like I can point to probably three or four lads that I can pick TG, I can pick John Donnelly, I can pick Owen Cody, Mossy Keown, and say that if I hit in a ball, I'm going to say that there's a strong chance about ball retention, right? But same with Limerick, we don't have to talk about them lads, but same with Clare. Just, I think forwards in terms of ball retention, they're not getting enough out of the likes of Desi, truthfully speaking. And from a half-forward perspective, they need more penetration from there. Now, when I say they need it, as if you can't just click your fingers and next thing it comes up, you know. But, like, do you go, is Ozzie Gleeson going to come back? You know, it's probably the questions that need to be answered. Who knows? Will he be rejuvenated after his year off? I just think that from a defensive perspective, they're not bad. Like, key perspective, good. Midfield, we know, not bad at all either. Just in the forward unit, more penetration, half forward line.
I do like that from Conor Cormac Quaid, by the way. Davy de Galway, which has been suggested above. Scale swear jar would become a swear bucket if that was to happen.
That is not the answer.
It is not, is it? No. So, to conclude that, when you see all the people who are putting in here for who they should go for, I see Scale and Joe Canning for the Galway job. Yeah, I mean, I saw the suggestion earlier as well, which was if that happens, do we get Bubbles to replace Scahill on the pod if he gets in with the senior management? I presume, by the way, it's way too early for you or for Scahill to step up, or sorry, you or Canning to step up to that type of role.
Into senior management?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's way too early. Sorry, no, way too early. You don't even deserve it. Nowhere near it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think for a senior inter-county management job nowadays, like, it's a serious position. And like, if you look at the top hurling counties, like, there's only there's only 11 of them, 11 positions. Like, so you have to be experienced and deserving of that position. So, geez, no, not yet.
Yeah. Yeah. Tin Shun is trying to put in all the people that you don't want as well into the suggestion here. So fishing away at the moment. Galway need Davy and Davy needs Galway is the claim that's being made there. So yeah, we're not gonna fall for that one. This isn't our first podcast. Right. Limerick then, Murph, in your opinion, at this stage, are they further advanced this season than they were last year? Because bear in mind, they were actually probably in a more delicate situation going into the last round last season, still produced it. And motored on from there.
Good question.
What you see from Limerick now, even taking the injuries into account, better place now than 12 months ago?
Are they better placed? They're better placed in terms of injuries, certainly. And like where I see Limerick at the moment, the lads who are coming in off the bench, particularly in the forwards, are outstanding. Like O'Brien came in there today from Shaven Slanigan, got 3 points after 20 minutes. Immediate impact. Got 3 points. Adam English comes in. And I think, Scale, you said earlier, Adam English has been hitting the ground running every single game they brought him in. Even when he started, like he was one of the lads that was starting early in the league. Early in the league. And he was really kind of the main lad there for them during the league and hurling really well. I see them. You know what? They're not far away from where they were last year in that, like, you know, Peter Casey is out this year. Sean Finn was gone at this stage last year. You had Keane Lynch last year with a hamstring kind of on and off. You know, they seem to be just kind of carrying these injuries here and there. But the big thing is that they can absorb that. They're in that position to absorb it. Where they are this year now is, exiting the league at the semi-final, okay, fine. Beaten by Cork, like that's the interesting result still. You know, beaten by Cork. Mentally, Limerick can take that. They'll be fine. But, you know, when you see Dermot Burns maybe just off the freeze in the last few games and a few wayward shots. They had 12 voids after, I think, about 10 minutes today, which was mad as well. I'd put an asterisk beside it and I'd say, you know, I need to know more about this. Like, but if there's one team that can go out and do that and then turn it on the next day, it's Limerick. You know, Dermot Burns could go out the next day. And like, I remember when Limerick played Tip maybe 2-3 years ago in the Gaelic grounds, Dermot Burns had a small bit of an off day and he went out and I think he got man of the match the following game. He's capable of doing that. And the rest of the team are capable of. I think it was more symptomatic of they were coming in. And I think the game in Thurles was quite similar. There was a little bit of coming into the game, knowing that they were good enough to beat Waterford and just keeping them at arm's distance. It wasn't a deliberate tactic, but there's kind of nearly something that goes unspoken there where you kind of can't raise it above going out and absolutely hammering them. But you're making bad decisions, you're striking wides. But when the pressure comes on you, you still perform and you still, you know, put the ball over the bar and get the scores you need to get. So the two games of Munster today were kind of funny that way. But Limerick, where are Limerick at the moment? They're probably very in a very dangerous position because people are now starting to say that, oh, geez, they're frail. They're absolutely not frail. They just haven't been shooting the lights out. That's all it is. They still got 30 points at their ease today without really creating any goal opportunities. But if you look at another day, Garrod Hegarty is in for 2 goals early on. You know, if there maybe wasn't, I thought, to be honest, both of them were fouls, to be honest. I know Don Logue said the first one that Tadhg Na Bhfearsa came in, he got a bare flick, but to be honest, he took more Garrod Hegarty than he did the ball, I think any other day, there's one black card there at least, or there's a goal from open play and it changes the complexion of it. So I think Limerick are in a very dangerous place for everybody else at the moment because people think there's some way that they're frail and they're absolutely not. They're probably, injury-wise, they're probably in a very similar position. They have key lads out, but they have key lads to come in at the same time or they have other lads to come in. So it's very finely balanced at the moment. But the one thing I would say is that the fact that they have that loss against Cork, it'll stand clear going into a Munster final, certainly, because they're not at the moment, from every other team looking outside in, they're not the, you know, the completely undefeatable team. You know, they have been beaten once and they've been beaten in a league semi-final, and the team that beat them in the league semi-final, Clare Bet. So, you know, that's the thing. So it's such a fine thing to try and put your finger on. But the one thing you have to say with Limerick full stop is that, you know, this Limerick team, the day that they turn it on, it's nearly game over for everyone else. Like, if they turn that on in the Munster final or All Ireland semi final or whatever it is, and they find that flow which they can find, well, then it's an uphill battle for everyone else.
Isn't it amazing, lads, how let's say the world is behind Cork now? Cork are nearly unbeatable to some of the public.
Mm. But Cork the team to beat them, as you say.
Limerick were a couple of points off at injury time. That's actually what I mean.
Yeah, completely.
Everyone, I think people probably make the mistake of comparing Limerick to the sheer dominant force that they have been previously, and say that they're not that. Yeah, maybe they're not that at the moment, but they're still excellent, because the dominant force is in the bracket of the best team ever.
Yeah. You
know? Whereas right now, if you're looking at Limerick, are they the same team as last year? Who knows? We'll find out. They're still unreal. Like, so
they are, yeah. And as you said about Cork there, the one thing that has stood against Cork is actually, when people say that they can go and beat Limerick, you know, it's kind of friend. I was expecting shots fired there.
No, just James skirting in as a selector, but there you go.
But like, I mean, Cork, the other question is then, if Cork are the team to beat Limerick, can Cork handle that tag? That's the other thing. Cork are better off being underdogs going into a game, people writing them off and, you know, turning it on then with the bite between their teeth.
Yeah, a fast team would beat Limerick is Sean Dunne, who's taking
it very fast.
Thinks that Cork can beat them. You want to be fast, you want to be clinical, you're going to have to do a lot of good things from here, because I think when Limerick get to this stage, proven quantity, Munster finals, once they get to Croke Park, bloody difficult to stop. But can Clare stop them, Scal?
Can it be done? It certainly can be done. I think for this team, they need it now. You know, I hate to say this now, but it came into my head, like, if Clare don't beat Limerick in the Munster final and, you know, kind of don't win the Ireland this year, they're going to be classed as like the Mayo team that came up against Dublin when they did the 5 in a row. Do you know what I mean? Just almost there, nearly there, but just not there. You know, but they certainly have the tools to do it. They certainly have the players. They're so evenly matched, these two teams, if you look at the group on paper. But they just, Limerick seem to have had their number, obviously have in the last number of years. So it's a big question, but I put value on the fact that they haven't dropped off terribly, you know, Clare, you could say, in terms of their performance in the league. And I just think they get better. Venue-wise, is this going to be in Thurles?
Yes. It has to be Thurles, yeah. They have a rotation going around, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So
but it's Thurles for this one, definitely.
Last time they played Limerick and Thurles in the Munster final, we got a humdinger, extra time. Oof. So if that comes up and transpires again, we'd all be happy.
Yeah, big time. I don't know, Murph. Are Clare at the level now to do it? Like, look, they've obviously beaten them in Championship. First half performance this year was really, really good. And then Limerick were obviously better in the second half. Clare would maybe look on with a bit of regret. But a team who've shown that they can beat them, can they do it this time?
Of course they can do it. Absolutely they can do it. Like, go back, 6 weeks ago, and they were 9 points up, 10 minutes to go. That'll still be ringing in their ears. They can. They've shown, like, but can they beat them and will they beat them are two different things. You know, as in, they have all the assets there to go out. They have all the players, they have lads coming off the bench, and they have the passion and they have the reason to go out and beat them. But it just always comes back to the will they. Can they means nothing. Will they?
Yeah.
That's the big question.
The question's, Murph, about Tony Kelly and whether he plays when he's fully fit. Again, I don't know how fit Tony Kelly is now, but they've been able to get minutes into his legs over the last couple of games. And look, again, it's difficult, I suppose, if you're Tony. I mean, you've come back from injury. Like, for him to have been out, to have missed the league, to have had months of rehab coming into this, it's hard to hit Championship when you haven't had that game time.
It is hard to hit it. And, like, to be honest, Clare don't need him to start at the moment. I think there's a tendency, a knee-jerk reaction there to go, he's Tony Kelly, we have to have him on the field. But I think what's important for, like, undoubtedly, Tony Kelly's one of the greatest players of all time. But you have to take each game as its own, you know, its own little moment in time. You can't just go, right, well, Tony Kelly has to start. Because although Tony Kelly is, between himself and Shane O'Donnell, the best forwards on that team, the player that maybe has hit a bit of form and has a lot of matches under his belt this year in Championship, maybe the player that actually stands in the starting 15 on the field. And if it means introducing Tony Kelly, like, we haven't seen Tony Kelly, it's a good while since we saw him play a full 70 minutes of hurling. And then the big question then is, well, if you are to start him, will he last the 70 minutes? Whatever, you know, the injuries are at the moment, will he last the 70 minutes? Or is it a case that, you know, all six forwards go out there, empty the tank, and when we start to see one start to wilt, bang in Tony Kelly, give him a free license and see what happens? That at the moment kind of looks like what would be the natural progression of this. Because if he's not starting this week in a game that you could very easily have started him and gave him 70 minutes, but for me, he doesn't start the Munster final then, because it's a quick enough turnaround at that stage. Like, you know, today was the ideal time really to play him.
Is it not a nice situation to have him in, though, if you bring him in, right, and maybe have him in a free roll somewhere in the half forward line? You've seen how the rest of the unit can hurl all year. Clare been doing well. They won the league. Any, I suppose, concerns that might be there might be about the drop-off after they get into good positions in games they've played in Munster, but they're back into a Munster final. I think if you get to a position where, Skell, you're sending him in, isn't this the perfect situation? He loves playing against Limerick, as Adrian McGrath pointed out a few minutes ago. He loves that bit of freedom, and I'm sure he's going to love coming in with a chance to maybe run at a game that's a bit more stretched. He could be a very, very important player off the bench in this Munster final.
You're talking about Tony Kelly here?
Yeah.
She's like, okay, the way,
by the way, I'm not down in his class. This wasn't me trying to say, like, you know, this is some run-of-the-mill hurler who we might bring on here. I'm talking about the specific situation of Tony Kelly might not be 100% sharp, but you can throw him into a Munster final here when he could potentially be a game changer.
Well, the way you phrased the question, it sounded like the Clare were in a very positive position when he comes on. So that he's coming on with 20 minutes to go or 25 minutes to go to kind of see it out, you know? But they mightn't be in that position. Like, they were obviously when they played Limerick in QC Park, they came on and they were, what, 9 or 10 points up and the whole thing changed. Not his issue. But, geez, if he's available, as like he's been back for a couple of weeks now. I thought, I'm the same as you, Murph, I thought he was going to start today, you know, and get a full game under his belt, or even just get like 50 minutes, you know what I mean, depending on how the game was going to go, and then start into the Munster final after that. But evidently it didn't happen. Question as you were talking about, if I was saying to myself, who do you take out then? So it's probably someone in the full forward lane. I don't know. In fairness, I think the likes of Daryl Owen is deserving of his position at centre field. You're probably looking at someone like Reedy, maybe, that would probably drop out, unfortunately. And you put Kelly, I wouldn't play Tony at 11, because Mark Rogers, in fairness to the kid, he's doing really well at 11. He's not going to play on the wing forwards because Duggan and Fitzgerald are occupying those roles. So it's just Cathal Malone come out. I don't know. So where do you play him? But if you were in a, you know, if it was in all things grand in the world and clear up a few pints and you bring him on, sure, he's an unreal sub to bring on. on the best of the country. He's savage to bring on. But I think that this game will require a heavy input from Tony Kelly. If he's available, as I start him.
My only thing on that was just that, you know, one of the greatest things management and a team in that they can have in the relationship there is that there's full on honesty and belief that we have a panel. You know, we're not a one person team or not a two person team, and no one's saying that about Clare. But there's sometimes that there's opportunities there where you can genuinely show that and just go, lads, look at, you know, at the end of the day, the best 15 players have to go out and start here. And at the moment, if we were to hold our hands up, we'd say we're not fully convinced that Tony Kelly at the moment would best be started at the moment, that if he comes on, you know, even after 20 minutes, player could pick up a knock very easily. Yeah. Comes on after 20 minutes or whatever. I remember years ago, and I believe it was Henry, you know, we had some game a good few years ago. It was an All-Ireland final and there was a lot going on. Like, lads had picked up injuries and stuff, and I think Henry was carrying a knock or something like that. But, like, spoke very honestly. They just said, like, you know, I'd love to be starting. I'll be savagely disappointed if I'm not. But at the end of the day, I want the best team to start. And what that kind of did for us was, like, Jesus, you nearly go through a brick wall. Like, you know, you're kind of there going, like, I have a chance to start here. I don't want to let him down. I don't want to let any of the lads down. And the moment that the opportunity was called, that he was going to come on, Jesus, he gave you some lift on the pitch. You were wrecked, but you're there going, Henry's coming on now, or whoever it was is coming on. And it kind of, there's such a great honesty and emotion in the moment that I think that, like, if Brian Lowen looks at this, he goes, of course I have. I've one of the greatest players ever played a game sitting on the bench. But at the moment, you know, we've had a lot of players that have hurled savage hurling over the last 6-10 weeks. We had Limerick to the pin of the collar before Tony Kelly was on the pitch. We can do it again. And, you know, that's what we're going to do, and we're all going to do it as a unit. And I think there, for me, there's something in that there, that there's a huge honesty that, you know, and a belief that that team would take from that, that if they go out and play Limerick, that, yeah, doesn't matter, we're not one-man team. If Shane O'Donnell isn't playing, we can beat them. If Tony Kelly isn't playing, we can beat them. And I think that's the small thing that could get them over the line. So, and look, that's why Brian Lowen's in the chair. This is the tough call that he has to make, you know. Some people will look at this and they mightn't even bat an eyelid. Oh, Tony Kelly's starting, he's not starting. And Brian Lowen will spend, he'll be out pulling every weed in the garden over the next 2 weeks, going, do I start him or don't I start him? And that's why he's there, you know.
I'm going to see if Skell wants to take one question from his old buddies at the Premier Review pod in a moment. But I've only seen the clip literally before we came on of Liam Cahill, who was like incredibly bullish. River Power was saying that it almost looked like he was squaring up to Shane Brophy. He was asking him. Well, Shane Brophy was asking about his future afterwards from the Nina Guardian. I don't know if that's entirely accurate, but I just saw the clip literally before we came on, and I'm going to read out Owen Cormacan's quotes here on it. Liam Cahill, when asked about his future, he says, quote, I take umbrage to your question. I have a 3-year term. I have full support of the county board, 100% behind me. And what's paramount to me and my management, I have 100% support of the players. That's not even a question. So Liam Cahill says he's sure that he's going to be around for next season. So have a look at the clip. It's on the Off the Ball Twitter if you want to see it and want to judge maybe the way that he responded or whatever else. Jerry also making a fair point about Ryan Taylor. Look, again, Clare's panel is stacked at the moment. The Premier Review one, though, because I did want to ask this to give you a chance to either respond to them or not, because they sent this on Twitter as opposed to in there. Premier Review. Get Skell to tell us about the circumstances about Micheál Donoghue leaving in 2018. An All-Ireland winning manager cast aside when Galway then had the potential to stay with Limerick. Sliding doors moment it felt for Galway hurling. So why did Micheál go?
He left in 19. And Dublin knocked us out in Parnell Park in 19.
Hmm.
And he called us into a room in the Lockery Hotel probably, I don't know, maybe 2 months later. I can't really remember the specific time. And it was a major issue with the board not getting backing. So there was things going on behind the scenes, to say, with the hurling board that there wasn't enough support being put the way of Micheál and his management team. Even I remember directly that Micheál had put a few things in place after the 17 game final to try and raise some funds, because whether we like it or not, a lot of the game is dependent on funds and what you can get going for yourself. And I don't think an awful lot of it transpired. So 18 was kind of a decent enough year. Then 19 was a major struggle, and then I say he was just worn out from dealing with that. It wasn't got to do with the players, the squad, work commitments, all that kind of jazz. Truthfully, it wasn't. It was simply down to a breakdown relationship, and he moved on.
Okay,
which was a big loss.
Yeah, I know. I think you've spoken about that before, but that, again, it's your very lived experience of what happened in 2019 when he left there as well. So, and look, again, Catherine Coughlin makes a fair point here, which is Colin Bonner was given a 3-year contract and then he was removed. So, look, they went back to the man that they really wanted. Yeah. Farming, before we finish, look at this, Podge the Cow, Skell. I saw someone else suggest as well, we'll Podge the Cow come in if Skell was to leave the pod for whatever reason. Again, look.
You want to see that calf now?
They really,
I'll take a picture of the calf.
Fantastic. Oh, I'll stick it up on Twitter and I'll put it into the members' pod as well. That's the extra bonus if you're an OTB member.
This calf, it's the best calf I have.
Right. go on. What's so great about Podge?
Oh, most of the definition. Like the size, the width, length, everything you want in a good animal. Maybe not the same attributes as Podge would have now, but huge muscle, wide arse, long body, straight back, good shoulders and feet. Looks excellent.
Oh, God.
Jerry's put this in a few times. Look, I don't know what's happening with Davy Burke, by the way. Jerry's saying it's important to say if this was Davy Burke's last game, what a great player, sportsman he's been. Again, I think, Skell, you picked your best teammates and you talked about, you know, how brilliant he was. And so we know how amazing he is. Like, again, I'm not basing, that could be what may well have been seen there, and his disappointment at the end of the game could have been just the Galway knocked out of the championship. I know how important, from chatting to him before championship, he saw this year as being. So, like, I wouldn't read into it that that's necessarily the end of his career. Also, we'll have to wait and see what happens at Galway as well. And all the stuff that's come in, Skell, about Farman. I think Farman might well be back on the agenda.
I just saw one there. Will Skell to fight a kangaroo? That's what he did to me.
Oh, jeez.
Podge is out of a pedigree Charlie Bull called Tumapik. Tumapik. I don't pronounce that name.
Right.
I see a question there. Anyways.
One last one. I'll stick it up on screen for you as well. We will finish then because I know people want to watch the Sunday game as well and see what's going on there. Mark Wogan. Lads, would appreciate some additional farm talk. Is Skell more of a New Holland or a Massey fan?
Neither. Class.
Oh, what's the ultimate tractor then?
Yeah, sure, look, in terms of price, everyone seems to love John Deere on this neck of the woods, but class is what I have. I love it. Class 420, love it. I'm going to take a collage of pictures and send them on to you now during the week.
Yeah.
Two.
Tractor, sheds, calves. And I'm going to try filming the calving. That's what I'm going to try, because I have one pedigree limousine left, a pedigree limousine to calf. I'm going to try film her for E2 boys.
Right. Kick any Wexford up on the Sunday game. We'll go watch it in a second. Catherine, that's incredibly harsh. Won't be cheering on Offaly next week that I'm not seeing the picture. Obviously wants to see a bit of Podge.
Oh.
Maybe it's the picture of the arrest, actually. Ooh, or not the arrest, the lift across. I don't know. I'm sure we can find something. We'll definitely get you a picture of Podge, but don't be hitting on Offaly, please. Had a lovely day with the Offaly under-20s today. They did a full media day, would you believe, lads, where literally, this is the first time I've ever seen this happen. 39 members of the panel talked to everyone.
That's excellent, don't you?
Jesus, yeah.
It's like literally mad. But yeah. It's Leo O'Connor for you. And
I just think the whole, the nearly hiding players or hiding people from media is, that day is gone, I'd say. Players are too open and accessible now, so let them off.
Yeah. The one that stood out, and sure, we're going to do a members pod tomorrow, Scale, is the plan anyway, but like Adam Screen's got all this attention on him at the moment. Went to have a chat with him, 20 minutes, great stuff. Talked about, you know, players mobbing him on the, or sorry, fans mobbing him on the pitch and all that.
Mm-hmm.
He had the perfect answer. Says he'll stay in the pitch for an hour if people want to come up to him. Because he was saying that when he was a young lad, and he is only still 19, but he used to chase after TJ Reid and Joe Canning. And he was telling me that he still has a Joe Canning hurl at home, which he put tape over to make sure that his autograph wouldn't actually fade, so he still has it. So he's a hurl that Joe Canning signed ages ago. Yeah. And so he was saying, look, if 100 kids want to come up to me after a game and I have to stay in the pitch for an hour, I'll take every selfie and I'll sign every autograph.
Well, fair play to him, because you can never underestimate the potential influence you'll have on a child.
Yeah.
Regardless of how minor you might think the interaction is, you know.
Yeah. Final note, look at this River Power. We're not stealing any materials from smaller fish. That is a total side podcast that Woolly has about farming. We just introduced a little bit of farming talk here and there. It wasn't planned at any point, but people seem to enjoy it. Then there was a backlash. Really annoyed Dubs Fair City. He's obviously enjoyed Dublin qualifying so much he's not appeared in the live chat here. Either that or they're waiting to see if Monday comes around. So I'm sure there's going to be lots of slagging about all that as well. So we shall see. Good luck to Offaly next week. Thank you, Jason O'Dea. I have no impact over the result whatsoever, but it should be a great final. Again, I saw that the Tipperary wonder point was brought up earlier on when I was mentioned about the umpire mistake. That was just a standout moment from Friday for me, but I love the still shot of the shot that has to bend around the Cork hurl, which is going to make the block, and it goes between the posts. It's amazing. Like under-20s, under-21s have been incredible box office games for the last few years. It seems if you sit down on a Wednesday night now and you've got TG Carr on, you're going to see a good game. That tends to be the way it goes. So yeah, that's not, by the way, having a go at Skell because of goal.
Not really, don't worry.
No. Farming and hurling go hand in hand. I would agree to an extent, yes. Moneygall will be buzzing for the final, Colin Duffy claims. Well, look, I've sung to Liam Hoare as well, who's from Carrick, which is in Tipperary geographically, but in Offaly for the parish and for the club. He says he's no interest in Tipperary whatsoever. Said he grew up, always an Offaly fan. So there you go. Going to be good fun. Going to be good fun. Damien Hayes' farming pod on smaller fish is iconic. I never said it wasn't. Not once. And the very last one here, which has come in here from, where are ye from, Will O'Callaghan? Well,
what?
This is a new person who has found her way into the pod, it would seem.
How did I get here?
Yeah, Paul Murphy's from Danes Fort in Kilkenny.
Thanks very much.
Skell, where are you from as well?
Capitagli by. I'm going to
Representing. And Burren County Offaly, one of the great clubs of this country. And once upon a time, one of the great hurling teams. Ocean Daly also asking, where will Offaly be in 5 years? I'll indulge you for a moment, because I do want to go and watch the Sunday game here. I think this is all very dependent on what happens with the next bunch that come through. So I was talking to Leo O'Connor earlier. He said to me, his plan right now is to try and win an All-Ireland Under-20 next week. But his real plan is 2026. So he was talking about there in talent identification to try and find players who are now in their first year in minor, and they've been bringing some of them along with the 20s to kind of give them the experience of going to the games and so on. And he was saying the plan has to be the next bunch. And maybe that's the bunch after he's gone, that they have to be successful. Because if you're in a county like Offaly, I was chatting to Paul Cody from Carlow a few weeks ago about this too. If you don't have the numbers, you got to make sure that you mine as much as possible from the talent that you have. You just don't have the numbers to be able to get the very, very elite through. And Leo Connor was saying the trick is if Offaly are going to be successful, and by successful he meant getting to provincial finals or getting to provincial semi-finals in the next 5-10 years, they have to get the most out of the teams they have now. This could go two ways. Everyone thought Offaly a few years ago won the All-Ireland Under-20 football. She's going to be doing great. Out of the Tailteann Cup after two games this time around. It doesn't necessarily follow that even if you've got a couple of good teams that they're necessarily going to translate into good senior teams. So I think a lot of people are just kind of dropping off there at the moment
that's
as well. Trying to enjoy the show. Same for me.
For sure.
Yeah. There are more O'Callaghans in Burr than there are Sprinkles in hundreds of thousands. River Power, are you a North Tipperary person? I've guessed that River Power is from Tipperary based on comments before, so... will Skell be having the Galway team down to the farm? Who knows? Who knows? Right. I think that's it. Never knew where you're from. Best looking in the under-20s final. Get revenge for Tip. Oh, let's not talk about 2022. Let us not talk about the end of that game where Tip got that late goal. Lads, it's been a pleasure. For those of you who are on the way out, maybe leave us a like. It'll help push things up. We'll do a live show again in a few weeks' time. I thought it was just the right way to do it after the games today. Have a bit of a chat and see where we go. James Skell, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. See you.
Paul Murphy, magic again.
Thanks, Ed.
The only bad news is I believe our live show is not going west after today, which is an awful pity.
Ah, shite.
I know. More news tomorrow. There was a meeting due at lunchtime tomorrow to decide where the roadshow was going. It's not going
to Galway. Huh?
It's not going to Galway now, unfortunately.
Where are you going, so? Oh, sorry, where are we going?
I don't know. I stuck it in the group in work where I assume people on a Sunday night are not working, where I went, I'm guessing we're not going to Galway, and there's been no reply yet, so maybe Clare, maybe Limerick, maybe somewhere on the border of Clare and Limerick. How's about that?
Yep.
Cork. I was in Cork. I was the home of Glen Rovers the other day. There's no statue to Patrick Horgan there yet. They need to sort that out. Come to Clare, come to Limerick. Alright, let's see.
Dolan's again. Oh god.
Yeah. Go to Burr. Yeah, and that's too many roadshows in Burr, unfortunately. Right, lads, been a pleasure. Thanks a million. The Hurling Pod, even, is brought to you by Bord Gáis Energy. They are the proud sponsors of the All-Ireland Senior Hurling Championship. Skell and I will be back a bit later in the week with a members' pod as well. Looking forward to it. Thanks again, lads.
Sound, lads.
See you guys. Bye.
OTB's The Hurling Pod.
With Bord Gáis Energy.
Proud sponsors of the Senior Hurling Championship.
When you earn your degree online at Arizona State University, you get everything the nation's most innovative university has to offer. The same internationally recognized faculty, the same nationally ranked programs, the same degree. Learn more at asuonline.asu.edu.